But it might become seven here. Jack Grealish is looking for another. And it is seven! The captain gets his second. This is a day of dreams for Aston Villa. And the stuff of nightmares for the team that were the champions last season. They have been destroyed.
Brilliant Villa. But what is going on with Liverpool? This is like a kid's game. I mean, this is embarrassing.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFerlin.
Hello.
Well, I'm not really sure what we're going to talk about this week. Of course, I'm joking. It was crazy Sunday, wasn't it? It was the craziest Sunday ever in the history of ever, of the history of the Premier League, and which is everything, isn't it, really? Because it didn't really exist before the Premier League. The dark times, of course, that's what we all call it now. But there was some incredible results. I think we can all agree there was one result that really, really stood out, because there was one team that ripped up the rule book. The thing was as well, it's managed by an English coach. An English coach actually taking a hold of a team, making tactical changes to it, and then embarrassing the opposition.
I thought David Moyes was Scottish.
No, I'm talking about Frank Lampard, aren't I?
Well, I thought you were talking about Sunday.
Well, we should have seen the runes were there. Frank Lampard managed to cobble together a Chelsea side to beat Roy Hodgson's Palace 4-0. Terry, you couldn't have seen that one coming, could you?
I certainly couldn't have done. I was bitterly disappointed. I think that Chelsea are an assemblage of highly talented riffraff by a rookie coach. And I was put in my place very firmly.
Of course, I am only kidding, of course, because yesterday was Crazy Sunday, and Crazy Sunday started off, as Terry says, with David Moyes' West Ham side going to Leicester and pulling off a 3-0 win. Yeah, and when you saw that, you know West Ham fans, even they wouldn't have believed that was going to happen, would they?
I don't think anybody believed that was going to happen. I mean, in fact, even just the day before, I was talking with a friend of mine about the number of clubs that can really challenge for the top four this season. And obviously Leicester were amongst that number. So when I saw that result come in, I was pretty stunned, actually, and a little bit disappointed because I don't really like West Ham that much. But credit to them, it's a good result. And it started what was to be a really, really, really mad Sunday. Mad Sunday. I thought that at the end, when I woke up this morning, having had a few drinks last night, I thought, well, maybe I just imagined all of that happening. But I didn't. I checked my phone and it was all real. Crazy.
Did you watch the whole day unfold there, Terry? Or were you, like a lot of other people, just getting the notifications coming up on flash scores, looking at the numbers rising up and thinking, my phone is obviously broken?
I followed the notifications up until the United-Tottenham game, which I switched on, but was flicking between that and the Bayern Munich game, Bayern versus Hertha Berlin, which in itself was a crazy game, because Robert Lewandowski scored four goals in that game, but they won 4-3 with a last minute winner against what is a very, very good and impurposed Hertha side. But obviously that's not the real story. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the shenanigans that went on at Old Trafford. And yeah, so I mean, at that point, yes. And then I was going to sit and watch either the French game, or I was going to watch the box set game, which was the Juve-Napoli game.
Of course, yes.
But obviously the Juve-Napoli game didn't happen because of, again, crazy shenanigans. And I thought, well, I'll give the Liverpool game a watch for a little while, and, well.
So what was your analysis of it then, Terry? Where did it all go wrong for Klopp?
Well, I have actually been thinking about that for a little while, and I think that we're talking about an assemblage of individual errors all happening all at the same time against an extremely good and well-drilled and well-coached Aston Villa side with some very good players, it should be said. I don't think we should be necessarily shocked that Villa won that game. We can be shocked by the scoreline, I don't think we should be shocked by the result. I listened to Sven-Göran Eriksson on Sky Sports News at lunchtime, who pointed out that the problem with playing as Liverpool do the high press is that it's beautiful to watch and it's very, very effective, but it requires a tremendous amount of energy and discipline and preparation. And he was, I think, reading between the lines, what he was saying was that Liverpool didn't probably have any of those components. And I just think that Liverpool were just underprepared for the game. And there may well be some good reasons for that that don't necessarily mean that there's a issue with the coach or is there some kind of systemic issue. But clearly they had this massive melt right at that one moment. And I wonder whether or not we'll be seeing a bit more of this in the future, not just with Liverpool, but obviously, United, it's a different situation with United. Ask my analysis of that. I'll give that to you later or not, if you ask. But Liverpool, this was an anomalous result, I would say, with Liverpool, whereas perhaps not with United. And it'll be interesting to see whether we see future anomalous results going forward, particularly with teams who've had short pre-seasons and also have congested fixtures. I think it's possibly a result that reflects the times in which we live.
Jan, would you go along with that? Do you think this is a COVID crazy anomaly?
Well, COVID is affecting a lot of different things in a lot of different ways. And I think that the results on the pitch are definitely, there's something weird going on, isn't there? We've seen a clutch of strange results and very high scoring games. And then there's the controversy over the handball rule and things like that. So there's a lot of things in play at the moment that's making things very interesting. So I don't have a dog in the fight, if you like, in the Premier League, but I'm finding it incredibly entertaining to watch at the moment because it's gone mad, which is great if you're a neutral, really. I agree that the result is probably a one-off. I don't think Liverpool are going to get hammered every week from now on in. I do think it'll take them some time to get over that. They've got some work to do this week, although there's an international break, isn't there? So maybe that might come at a good time for them, that the players have a bit of a break away from their day job. But their next game coming up, I note, is away to the resurgent Everton. So after you've had your arses handed to you, all right, you've had a bit of a break and you should have some time to recover and ponder what happened that afternoon. You've got to go to Everton, who are bang in form, and they have got some seriously good players that will really tear you apart. And if Liverpool are going to play as they did yesterday against that side, I mean, you were talking a cricket score. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if they go there full of nerves, thinking, you know, we've lost our mojo here, that Everton give them a right pasting, which would be brilliant and beautiful to watch.
Well, of course. I mean, like Everton, everything seems to be falling into place for them at the moment. James Rodriguez has come into the side and fit straight in, hasn't he, Terry? And you could stay the same with Villa there, because you had, of course, you had Grealish there, who's an incredible player himself, but he's been joined there by Ollie Watkins and Ross Barkley. Very, very good players going forward. And obviously they took their chances perfectly, didn't they? And they look like they've settled down into that side immediately.
Yeah, a slight caveat, because there were a couple of wicked deflections, weren't they, which made Liverpool a touch unlucky. But, you know, I mean, both teams were getting exactly what they deserve. It's a great combination of, like, there are some players who just go in, they don't need hours or days or weeks to bed in and settle in and get into the vibe of the dressing room and get used to the culture of the club and all of that stuff. And they say, no, they're just, I'm a footballer. I go in, put me in the position, give me some rough tactical, just you know, instructions, and on away I go. And evidently, Ross Barkley clearly champing at the bit to get stuck in, working with some extremely talented attacking players around him. I mean, and he's really done the business. And I'm really impressed with Ollie Watkins, because, you know, to go from the Championship into the Premier League is a tough one.
Go from Exeter, wasn't he? He started there, didn't he?
Yeah, well, indeed, yeah. I think it helped a bit, because obviously Dean Smith is a former Brentford coach as well, and maybe that similar ethos has kind of helped Watkins to a certain degree. But you've got to put a lot on this on Dean Smith, who knows how to put together a team, you know, knows how to coach a good team under fluid circumstances, and he deserves a tremendous amount of credit. And, you know, so far, it's the good coaches that are getting rewarded more or less with the right results. It's like, it's nice to see Ancelotti signing Rodriguez, And then not saying, well, no, well, I'll bench him for a few weeks and, you know, let him start him easy. He said, no, stick him in the middle there and just make him run the game. And he was off, you know, like he just wound him up and off he'd gone. Didn't need anything else, you know. This is good coaching, good man management and great football, great footballing, great footballering.
Yeah, and one game that had the propensity for some craziness did deliver as far as that was concerned. And that was, of course, Tottenham visiting Old Trafford. Of course, the first 5 minutes of that game told you exactly how that match was going to go down. Which game for you was crazier? Do you think it was the game at Old Trafford or the game at Villa Park?
I only watched the Manchester United Spurs game.
Yeah.
So after that roller coaster,
that was it, you
I
were
just
done.
Thought, I was like, well, it reminds me of the time when Terry said he drew a bath during a Palace game because he just knew what was going to happen. So I finished that and I just said to my wife, okay, let's just go. We'll go and watch whatever you want now. So off I went into the front room and we watched, you know, whatever we watched. And that was that. And my phone was just buzzing away next to me. And I'm going, oh, don't. Don't say I've missed out on that. But I did. Obviously, I caught up on the highlights. On the Man United Spurs game, yes, you're right. I mean, after 5 minutes, it was quite clear how mad that was going to be. And it got madder as well. I mean, the goals don't just tell the stories, sending off as well, which was very controversial. I've taken a bit of an interest in Spurs results of late, mainly because of the documentary, which I watched on Amazon. And they're probably, well, I wouldn't say prominent in people's minds, but they're certainly up there a bit more recognisable because you've had a look inside of the running of that club. Mourinho came across really well in that, I thought. So I've just been looking out for those results just because it's been in my mind. And so it was, I thought, great to see them do what they did against Manchester United. It's always sad to see a team get a right hammering, but actually with the two teams that got hammerings this weekend, it was actually really entertaining. Man United were woeful, and it was great to hear Gary Neville have to answer all of those criticisms across the game. But Spurs were imperious. They were so good. Harry Kane was shown that he's not just a goal machine, which he is, but he's also, I mean, the goal that he set up for Son, where he thought quickly and played it through straight from the free kick, was amazing, and his finishing was good, and the leadership and everything about that guy's game yesterday was incredible. But it was a fantastic team performance, and this is a team that's got Gareth Bale waiting in the wings. So I think that Spurs are going to have a really good season. I know you probably don't want to hear this, Graham, but I think that, you know, with teams like Spurs in with a shout, with the teams like Everton in with a shout, it is changing the makeup of the top half of the table. And I think it's going to make for a really, really interesting season.
Yeah, Terry, what was your reaction to the United game?
I mean, my feeling was it was kind of on the cards. I mean, perhaps not to such a dramatic effect. I mean, 6-1 is an awful lot of goals to lose when you're Manchester United and when you're at home. But I think that they had been outplayed against Brighton and had to rely upon the individual talent of their players and an unusual referee call to get off the hook in that game. And they were completely outplayed by Palace as well. And so it's not a surprise at all that they lost. And in fact, I think if Man United fans are looking for any kind of encouragement from it, then it may serve as some kind of wake-up call that their coach is probably not up to it and that their squad doesn't appear to be up to it either. But they might be good enough players, but they're probably not up for it. Either way, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked and answered at Old Trafford, you know, about moving forward. And maybe there are some silver linings for them to draw from there. But I mean, you kind of feel there is, and this is a conceit from a supporter of a traditionally smaller club, that sometimes bigger clubs, there's a degree of entitlement. And that they tend to sometimes, you know, get away with bad performances, the whole winning ugly thing and playing badly and still winning and stuff like that. And I don't think that that's sustainable. You can't keep being rubbish and just expect that, you know, some one of your players is going to do something really cool and bail you out. They needed this, Manchester United, frankly. And I think the rest of the football public needed it as well. I think it was therapeutic for the rest of us because, you know, it's just good to see a team like that and a club like that get its comeuppance every once in a while.
Yeah, and you've already said about how well Tottenham played. And when teams like Liverpool or Man United get beaten badly, the focus is almost entirely on them rather than the team that beat them. Even when it's a side like Tottenham, one of the other contenders for the top honours in the Premier League. But it is always going to be focused again on United. And that's because United and Liverpool have so much influence. So I guess we can't really be too surprised that the narrative always goes back to them, especially when there are so many of the commentators and the pundits and the people that we're getting opinions from are connected to those clubs. You've already mentioned Gary Neville there.
Yeah, agreed. It is a shame because what people should have been talking about. I mean, with the Villa one, maybe there was a bit more credit given to Villa than to Spurs, but probably because they outgunned Spurs in their particular fixture. But it's you're right. It should be about the victors in this. Spurs did incredibly well. Villa, you could argue they had a much bigger mountain to climb. You're right, they've got a great side there. But I didn't expect them to be putting seven past Liverpool. I don't think anyone expected that at all. Hopefully it will turn the narrative a bit more towards these clubs. Villa deserve, I mean, they didn't have a particularly good season last season, kind of stayed up just. But, you know, clearly they're doing really well this season. I mean, the whole thing's on its head, really, isn't it? And Sheffield United, who had an amazing season last season, an absolutely terrible start to the season. Ooh. There's a lot of surprising things happening. I don't know if this is going to continue for the whole season. I hope it does, because it makes for really, really entertaining sport, which is exactly what it should be, really.
It's funny, Graham, because, I mean, were it not for what happened yesterday, I think that for a lot of people, the big result, the big game of the weekend would have been actually the City-Leeds game, which was a fantastic game of football, but it ended with a rather unremarkable 1-1 scoreline. But
yeah, objectively, it was the best game of the weekend, wasn't it?
Both excellent football teams playing excellent football, playing the game properly, generating a balanced result. You know, when people talk about how the Premier League is not a farmers' league, then they can show you games like that and say, this is why it's such a high-quality league. But then, of course, you get the following day and, you know, and out come the ploughs and the scythe and the straw hats. You know, and suddenly it's back to being a farmers' league again. But we have to be where it's only 4 weeks in. And, I mean, there have been years in the past where, you'll get strange, anomalous kind of like happenings going on, maybe not as extreme as this, and you'll see, you know, unfamiliar clubs at the top of the table. But it's been a little while since we've seen that, and it is refreshing. But I do feel very strongly that what could happen here is that the teams that have done quite well in Europe and have had a shorter pre-season, and I'm assuming also that COVID has probably introduced some restrictions in terms of training and preparedness as well between games. But I think that we could see inconsistent results with teams that we usually associate with consistency. And it might be the teams that have, you know, fewer games to play, maybe more time, and maybe, dare I say, more experienced coaches as well, who might actually, you know, go well there this season. I wouldn't mind making a prediction that Everton would finish top four this season on that basis. This early in the season, bearing in mind.
Of course, because we do make predictions now for this season, yeah, because it's all crazy. We are making predictions on the podcast, and you're predicting Everton top four. Even four games in, I think that they've got a bit more about themselves. I thought they were a decent team last season. They just had a habit of just being able to chuck it away, like that amazing game they played against Newcastle, where they were 2-0 up with us into the second minute of injury time, and they ended up drawing the game 2-2. And there was a great game against Arsenal as well, which Arsenal won. But it said to me that this is the team that every neutral should be watching. Because doing the box set, we've had a look at other teams in other leagues, teams like Betis, Atalanta still going great guns. And of course it was Frankfurt, wasn't it, a couple of seasons ago that were doing really, really well. And actually, they're doing pretty well this season as well.
They still are, yeah.
Yeah. But it's great that Everton have come along and are actually doing something very similar and just mixing it up and putting these run of results. Obviously, we're going to see what they're really like when, as you say, Jan, when they've got that big derby coming up against Liverpool, to see what they're really made of. Of course, narratives will be written after that, but it's meaningless because it is only just one game.
Just to join in with the Everton love-in, I concur that top four is easily doable for them. To be honest with you, I mean, they're a good outside bet for the title. I mean, I agree. They are that good. And as you said, Graham, they were fairly decent last season, but they're just just look at the confidence and swagger that they're playing with now. I think it'd be really great for the game in this country if Everton did a job this season and really mix it up. I really do. So, good luck to them.
Yeah, and Ancelotti's just a brilliant coach. Oh, it would be awesome if he did it. And this is the time to do it, I think, for an outsider. I know Everton are a massively big traditional club, but you know, this is the time for another Leicester, I think, because of all the disruption and the oddness that's been going on. And I think that this is a good time for it to happen. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm being conservative, frankly, with my prediction of top four. I think actually Everton are well capable. We'll see. They'll lose 6-0 to Liverpool and then everything will be like, you know, oh, okay, you know, I'm an idiot. But there you go.
Obviously, the rivalry between Everton and Liverpool is famous. It's the famous Merseyside derby. But the so-called biggest rivalry in sport is between Manchester United and Liverpool, or so we're told. These are the two biggest clubs, and so therefore they must have the biggest rivalry. I mentioned before as well about the narrative of football, and because there are so many pundits who have either played for either Man United or Liverpool, the tone of the conversation in football is always about them and about how things in football affect them. Do you think that's a good thing for the game? Obviously, it's something for the broadcasters to have the opinions of these players because there are so many Man United and Liverpool supporters there. But is it healthy for them to dominate the narrative as well as the action on the pitch, Terry?
No, I don't think it's entirely healthy to dominate the narrative in that way. I don't think there's anything specifically wrong with having, if you like, a sort of like an English derby, a sort of like an English equivalent of Real Madrid and Barcelona or an English equivalent of the Derby d'Italia between Juve and Inter Milan. I think that that's actually quite healthy. I think that the danger is it takes away from the other great rivalries that go on in football that you know should be celebrated and should be explored. But you can understand the commercial media's point of view because obviously these are the two biggest clubs in the country, arguably in the world. They have national support. And if you're a national broadcaster or a national media producer, a newspaper, radio station, what have you, then of course you're going to skew your coverage towards those two clubs. And of course you're going to get very excited when those two clubs play. And there's no question. I mean, the rivalry between them is perfectly authentic. I don't think it's necessarily as traditional as maybe some people think out. I think it has been encouraged by media and by fan culture to a certain degree and pushed a lot more. And a lot of that is also because, you know, historically we've seen Manchester City very much in the ascendancy now, but in the still recent past, City were, you know, bluntly a third division club at one point, fairly recently. And Everton have had their, although they've been relegated, they've had their travails. But as those rivalries have probably lost a degree of value in the broader national conversation, it's meant that the United-Liverpool game has taken on more significance. And so, you know, it's a bit of yes and no, really, a bit of column A and column B, really, to that one. It does irk me that so many Sky Sports pundits are either former Manchester United and Liverpool players. I really feel it would be better to have punditry represented by a broader spread of players. But, you know, in fairness, it's only football.
Well, yes, yeah, and it is only football, isn't it? And perhaps we shouldn't watch the punditry anyway, but we still do just to see how curmudgeonly Graham Souness or what bonkers thing Patrice Evra is going to say next. This week they were apologising for something Graham Souness said, so still the rivalry goes on.
Patrice Evra said yesterday that he was saying that he was thinking about speaking to Sky and saying he wanted to resign after, you know, his first few weeks just because of what he'd seen. It's like, mate, get a grip. Your team's lost 6-1. You know, just get over it. Get on, move on.
Yeah. Who knows what the next game will bring?
Yeah, will you see? Exactly, will you see what happens next? But seriously, though, I don't mind it in the pundits. I quite like the discussions that they have on Sky on Sunday. I think they make a good show of it across the day. What I object to really is having Gary Neville, who I respect. I think he's a good pundit. He's got a lot of good things to say, and obviously he was a world-class player. But does he have to be the co-commentator on every Manchester United game? And the same with Jimmy Carragher on the Liverpool games, because it ends up just being about those clubs. And you know, and the if I hear Gary Neville talk about the Manchester United way, and you know, it's not the way that it should be done, you know, I might actually have to kill myself, because it's just constantly coming out. I mean, Jimmy Carragher doesn't have the same sort of stuff to refer back to, because obviously he was part of they were fairly successful, but not to the same extent that Manchester United were, of course. So he doesn't have that kind of pedigree, if you like, to call upon. But you know, it does get tiresome hearing former professionals from Manchester United talk about the fact that it's not done the way it used to be, because you know, that time's over and you need to move on.
We've heard all this before, of course. It reminds me of those years that followed after Liverpool last won the title back in 1990. And then as the 90s progressed and it looked increasingly more likely that Liverpool were not going to win the title for a good while, that the same complaints and analysis was being offered from contemporary pundits who were despairing at the loss of the boot room and the end of the Shankly spirit, and you know, what would Bob Paisley say now, and where would, you know, it's at that point when you sort of like do have to remind them and say, look, actually there's a very good chance that a sizable portion of your audience are actually quite enjoying this decline of a team that's been, you know, beating up on them for decades, and that maybe you should be a little bit more reflective of that. And I agree with Jan. I find Gary Neville's analysis is excellent, but he just becomes just tedious and curmudgeonly when he's just unhappy that, you know, his team, you know, is losing. And then there's a bit of this also with this smacks of fandom from people who, you know, bluntly are not used to being given a kicking like that. It rarely happens to them. And so, you know, they don't know how to deal with it emotionally, you know, because, I mean, if you support any other club, you know, you will occasionally get hammered. You know, my team got hammered 4-0 on, I mean, that doesn't happen that often, but it happens often enough for you to sort of go, and just sort of, you know, shrug your shoulders and say, well, this is stuff that happens. And I feel certain Jan is, you know, maybe has the same experience, not wishing to put words in his mouth, but I get irked by big club fans getting, you know, thinking that the world has ended because they've just been hammered. Well, for count yourself lucky that it only happens every once in a blue moon to you, because it's actually quite common for the rest of us.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, if you remember, we did a podcast just on Sunderland's 8-2 thrashing at the hands of Southampton. And in fact, listeners, it didn't stop at the end of that either, because I still got the piss taken out of me for a good few days afterwards. But that happens, you're right, Terry, to everybody else. And, you know, we shouldn't be having this kind of national debate about, is this the end of Liverpool after they won the title so well last season? And then they have a very bad result. But you're right. I mean, that scoreline could have easily been 4-2, and we wouldn't really be talking about it too much, would we? We'd just be talking about Manchester United game. Because the reality is that, you know, three of those goals were fortunate to go in. But I don't want to take anything away from Villa. I would take all of those goals if it was my team. Absolutely.
Interested to, I saw a tweet by our friend of the show, Chris Lee, who tweeted a clip from one of these YouTube channels, and one of these probably really obnoxious, like YouTube sort of like fan TV things that come up, and I think it was a Liverpool fan watching the Man United game and just like glorying in the defeat, and then, you know, obviously we all know, you know, what happened. I'm in a WhatsApp group with a couple of friends, two of which are, you know, Liverpool fans, and one of them's a United fan, and one of the Liverpool fans really, really busting the balls of the United fan. You know, obviously it's banter, you know, but really loving the fact that, like, United were getting absolutely hammered. And then, of course, you know, a few hours later. And, you know, I mean, it was really good because, like, the United fan immediately took the moral high ground by saying that he wasn't planning on gloating. which of course is the biggest slap you could give. And it's fair enough. I mean, good, fair play to the Liverpool guy because he completely fronted up and he took it well, you know. But like Chris Lee sort of like said, well, maybe the message here is that you should just support your own football club,
yeah,
and maybe not necessarily get, you know, caught up in gloating over other clubs' misfortunes. And there is an element of rivalry that I think has always been there, and that is to revel in your rival's misery and failures. But I think that there are limits, you know, lines that are boundaries that I think are there as to what's sort of like emotionally healthy. And I think that if you tend to define yourself by watching other teams lose, maybe you need to rethink your fandom a little bit and ask yourself if that's what you're really in it for. I don't mind when Brighton win that much. I just hate it when they beat Palace. In fact, I was quite pleased when Brighton were promoted because it meant that the derby game was back on, even though I actually hate it. But I think these are perfectly natural inconsistencies to have. You know, I mean, I remember there was one guy, I don't know whether you remember this, Jan, but I remember one guy when his most hated team got relegated, he spent the whole evening on Twitter mocking them. What was the name? It was Newcastle, wasn't it? That's right.
Right, okay.
The entire evening on Twitter, just reveling in it. Absolutely. And I just thought, man alive, I really hope that this guy doesn't, you know, come to rue these outbursts.
Hubristic tweets.
Well, I don't remember that. I mean, whoever that individual is, I hope that, that you know, it hasn't come back to bite him, whoever he supports. Because if he supported, you know, for example, a team like Sunderland, then, you know, he wouldn't have a pot of piss in, really, would he?
He'd be feeling pretty silly right now.
Well, that is the thing about that, because you do make yourself like a hostage to fortune with that, don't you? Because the second that you've dug one of your friends out, then that's it. It's there in the bank, isn't it? And they're just going, this is going to come back to you. And the silly thing is that you know this, but you couldn't resist it, could you? You couldn't resist the cheap shot.
Yeah, they say revenge is a dish best served cold, but yesterday, United fans, I mean, like, there was still steam coming off that plate, wasn't there?
It was. I'm probably being curmudgeonly and miserable, and I don't want to stop people from having fun, sort of like lording over their rivals when they lose. But I don't necessarily think you should build an industry on that kind of thing. That's, I guess, what I'm saying.
Yes. Well, yeah, Sunderland did have a mention this weekend, because who was the last team to put 7 goals past the reigning English champions? Do you know that?
I don't know that. I'm assuming you're going to say Sunderland.
It did. In 1937 it happened.
Oh, against Arsenal?
Against Arsenal, yeah. There you go.
Right, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I must have been busy that day. But there's another example of how things can go. Because back then, Grim, as you well know, I mean, Sunderland and Arsenal used to just swap the titles every season. And that's obviously ebbed and flowed across the intervening time. But these things come in cycles. We're clearly seeing Manchester United's decline and have been watching that for a number of years. But I think it's too early to say that Liverpool are going to go another 30 years without a trophy. But I would kind of like to see that happen.
I wonder if there is something in that, because the rivalry, the built-up rivalry of Man United and Liverpool really stems from the era of Shankly and Busby, where they did swap the titles between one club and the other for the mid-60s. And I wonder if, because that was at the beginning of televised football, where it was coming into people's houses, and that these were the two clubs that were at loggerheads, whether or not that's just continued the narrative all the way along, or whether or not it's built from there and has never really moved from there. Obviously, someone else could probably look at that and say, well, actually, no, it's because so many thousands of people support them. But
maybe. Is there a kind of an element maybe of industrial, sort of like social rivalries that are outside football as well between the two cities? A bit like
Dortmund,
Gelsenkirchen and Southampton and Portsmouth and that.
Yeah, there is. A lot of people say that it goes back to the opening of the ship canal, which took a load of work from Liverpool to Manchester. Yeah, and we've said this before, haven't we, about it seems that port towns around the coast all seem to blame each other for scab work. You get that with Portsmouth and Southampton, you get it with West Ham and Millwall, and you get it with Sunderland and Newcastle. That is ingrained, isn't it? That's what happened, that's a story, and that's I think Swansea and Cardiff have enjoyed the same myth going back to starting their rivalry. And I don't think it's got anything to do with that, has it really, Jan? I think it's just fun to have, isn't it?
It is fun to have. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're talking about coal rights from the, you know, 18th century with, and then, stuff to do with the Civil War, which is just crazy that fans would even reference that. And to be fair, most of them don't. but the truth is that, you know, these clubs had a healthy rivalry. And in the 70s, that turned nasty.
Yeah.
For a lot of clubs. And certainly in the Northeast, it turned nasty then. And it's been fairly nasty on and off ever since, which isn't nice at all. It's not what, you know, as we said earlier, it is only football. But that aside, it is good to have rivalry because it does add more spice to the fixtures, adds more spice to your own team playing, and you look forward to it. When I was a kid, the biggest derby was Everton-Liverpool, and that was just what it was. I mean, they were both teams at the peak of their power. I mean, this could just be me. I didn't remember it the way it was in the kind of mid-80s. I don't remember it being Manchester United and Liverpool was as big as Liverpool and Everton. Manchester United weren't necessarily a club on my radar back then because they weren't you know, winning everything, whereas Liverpool and Everton were. So that was a bigger fixture from my point of view.
We're talking about club rivalries, but that all goes on hold now because it's international break. For some reason, they're just wedging in a load of international fixtures, including an England versus Wales friendly. I really have no idea why. This week, we're going to take a week off the box set just because we can. Right now, we're off down the road to watch some actual football, aren't we?
We are. FA Cup action, no less.
Yes, we've got a hastily rearranged FA Cup match that was postponed on Saturday. It was away at Burnham FC. That was postponed because the pitch wasn't good enough and they've rebooked it for Monday night and they've swapped it to Whiteleaf's home game. So we're off to go and see that. Bit of Monday night football. Should be a barrel laugh, shouldn't it?
Absolutely. Great. Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it.
Great. But that's all we have time for this week because of that. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry Fellon, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
He's pounding down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
Really is having Phil Neville, who I respect. He's a good pundit. He's got a lot of good things to say, and obviously he was a world-class player. But does he have to be the co-commentator on every Manchester United game?
Gary Neville.
It ends up just being about those clubs. If I hear Phil Neville say about, you know,
Gary Neville.
the Manchester... Sorry, did I say
Gary,
Phil?
You said Phil Neville, yeah.
You had us at world-class player Phil Neville.
Yeah, did I? So I've written down Phil as well. I meant Gary.
Jan's recollection, I think, is correct, because Liverpool under Howard Kendall in the 1980s were brilliant.
Everton under Howard Kendall.
Many people...
Everton under Howard Kendall.
Liverpool under Phil Neville were amazing.
We're all right tonight, aren't we?
We are. It's COVID. It's COVID and the world's upside down. You know, cats and dogs living with each other. All of that. You know.
What the fuck is going on?
I'm finished, Graham. I have nothing more to say.
No, okay. Well, it's 20 past 7. We need to get to a football.
Graham's lost concept of time. It's all falling to pieces.
Right, okay. Look,
up is down.
Let's get this done so we can meet each other down on the football ground soon.
He's bound it down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.